You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, to the Rational Revolution. Holy cow. You've got Mark Becker, and you are at the right place because, hey, my God, friends, we got a guest for you. This guy's everywhere. My goodness. I see he's on the news. He's got, like, viral videos going. Proud son of Milwaukee, former state representative, former history-making lieutenant governor. My friend and yours. We're getting right to it with Mandela Barnes. Finally. Hey.
Finally, my man. Good to see you.
Yeah, for those who don't, I've been hounding this dude for like months because I wanted to get him here to comment on what's going on because I really, you know, the show is all across the state and I think that people want to hear your voice, you know, as much as they can because what you have to say matters. But first off, dude, how are you?
I appreciate that, man. Really do. Glad you got the show going and glad it's successful. And I'm glad yeah. You're part of it today, man. My response is good enough.
Yeah.
Doing
yeah.
good enough.
Yeah.
Right. Like all things considered, right? Personal life is fine. You know, it's just hard with everything else going on around, like all the uncertainty. I'm still very, very deep in the work, but also, you know, very deeply connected to people who are being, impacted by what's going on, whether it's friends that have lost jobs that were working for the federal government, people who are, you know, in the organizing community who are just, you know, scared to death about what's next for them. Or, you know, did they say a thing at some point that's going to bring, you know, the full breadth of the administration upon them? So, you know, so personally good enough, but it is very hectic.
I think what's cool is like you could have wrote a book and then just like went away, you know, and you didn't because you care and you care a lot. And so you're doing a lot. And I appreciate that a lot because of, you know, like I said, what you do has a big impact and you don't have to do any of this, but you are.
For sure, man. I appreciate you, man. It's you know, it's what I've been involved in for, you know, quite some time, but also just the impact of it, right? Like if I walked away, then that's, you know, one less person who is going to be deeply involved at a time where we need people to be deeply involved, right? Like after my race in 22, my speech the day after the election, I said, you know, these issues are still going to be present. Like these things are still going to matter. And it would have been real disingenuous if I just decided that, you know, see you. Good luck.
Peace.
Yeah. Peace.
So I got to say, so we saw this week, Tesla profits are down 71% over last year. Elon Musk is getting repeatedly kicked in the balls as his very nervous investors have requested him to come back to the company. He's agreed to dramatically scale back from Doge, essentially leaving politics. Take a bow, Wisconsin, right? What happened in April?
Yeah, well, what happened in April is he got embarrassed. You know, he made a gamble in 24, the presidential election. He won that one, and he thought that he could do it again. But people saw through it because they saw what happened as a result of Elon Musk making a financial investment in a U.S. election, and people were upset by that. People were incensed by that. Elon Musk became as much of the name on the ballot as Brad Schimmel went on CNN. I said, hey, look, you know, I was in the legislature when Brad Schimmel was attorney general. I disagree with him. I did not dislike him. Brad Schimmel was otherwise a very credible candidate. And honestly, I was nervous. Cannot tell you how nervous I was for the last year. Like, all right, I want people to take Brad Schimmel seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, Elon Musk just became a weight around his neck, fortunately for me, fortunately for us, fortunately for the state, but it could have gone a different way. And with that, I think that, you know, you look at some of the polling data that shows Donald Trump's historic disapproval rating, like, unfortunately, still too many people approve of him. But the person who's less popular than Donald Trump is Elon Musk. And Elon Musk, given what his impact on the negative impact on the Supreme Court race, you know, he's also making the president less popular. And that's one reason I'm not celebrating his departure just yet.
Well, and I want to talk about that. Like, you knew, I knew Brad Schimmel too. And what's insane, and Brad Schimmel's one of these people, but there's so many of these folks that, like, I didn't dislike the guy. He's not a bad dude. But then all of a sudden this extreme mega stuff happens, and it's like, what the hell happened to the guy that I thought, hey, I wouldn't have an issue sitting down with this dude. He's a good guy, you know? And then all of a sudden, Brad Schimmel, who the hell are you now? Oh, my God.
Well, same thing with Tommy Thompson.
Yes. Dude, I sent him a text. I'm like, Tommy, what are you doing? I had him on the show. And I was like, Tommy, what the hell is happening?
Yeah. I sat next to Tommy Thompson at the at Tony's sworn in after his reelection at the inauguration. And people were like, they sat you next to Tommy Thompson. I was like, honestly, had a great time.
Yeah.
I love next to Tommy Thompson. But he is also, like, you know, just becoming a person, you know, who, and we saw some of it, right? We saw some of it in 2012 in the U.S. Senate race in that primary, you know, how he ran that campaign. But it felt like he had come back to being his normal self. But this presidential election in 24, it's like, whoa, all right, well, this is not the Tommy Thompson that was governor of the state of Wisconsin for 15 years.
No. Right. And we're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And, like, what's frustrating is that so many of these people will go down that rabbit hole and, like, who are you?
Who are you?
Right.
Yeah, people, you know, not to bring Eminem into this, but you're going to lose yourself.
Yeah.
What is happening?
So, and you travel all over the country. Was this, because we in Wisconsin, we can kind of be, you know, insulated or in our little bubble. How big of a deal was this race?
Oh, man, I was in D.C. the week after for a conference, and that's all people were talking about.
Really?
It felt like a lot of the stress and depression, quite frankly, from the November election had, you know, was fleeting, right? Like, it felt like people had hope again. It felt like people felt like things, you know, could change, and that the, you know, Trump administration or any, you know, auxiliary or proxy of it was not as or is not as you know, all powerful as people may have felt.
Power to the polls. Talk about that. What they were influential.
Oh, for sure. Power to polls has been really active in the most recent election cycles. It's an organization that started before I got there. It was about, you know, 9 months old by the time I showed up. Yeah, serving as president of the organization, helping to steer us in a direction to, you know, build a machine that combats disinformation, a machine that increases voter turnout. But I want to be more specific when I say that, right? Like, you look at different models of turnout, and an informed electorate is a participatory electorate. And so we'll use Nevada as an example, because everybody talks about the Reid machine, the Harry Reid machine.
Folks.
And quite frankly, I want power to polls to be, have the same level of impact here in Wisconsin. But instead of saying we want to have the highest voter turnout, what I want is for the people that we talk to be the most informed voters in the entire state, the most informed voters in the entire country. And that requires year-round sustained engagement. It means not just showing up, you know, 30, 90 days before an election. It means talking to people before a ballot is even printed. That means talking to people when there is nothing to vote for. That means talking to people when political activity seems to be at its lowest point. Honestly, that's the best time because they are inundated with information. In fact, when we communicate with people while governing is or isn't happening, we are able to get people more involved in the process because they know or are able to see what their vote has resulted in. It means that, you know, the person they voted for, they can see in real time and will know whether they're doing the right thing or not. Or the person they did not vote providing the mechanisms to hold them accountable and to be able to contact them and petition them to, you know, to air their grievances where it fits.
Hell yeah. That's so cool, because I think also when an informed electorate and doing the things that you're doing, not only can it do that, but like we have these conversations in the lines at a grocery store or at home or at work, and an informed electorate can inform others when they say, oh yeah, well, you know, all these ballots were, no, let's talk about that. You know, we can change others and move that conversation forward. That's important.
For sure. No, it's incredibly important. And, you know, I do have a larger vision for the organization. Like, I want us to be able to do more briefings to yes. people. Like, we want, like, obviously we're going to still be on doors. We're still going to be, you know, on social media, but I want us to be at a place where, you know, we're just talking for a quick 15, 20, 30 minutes max yeah. about the most important topics of the day, the most controversial topics of the day, or the most confusing topics yes. of the day.
No, that's so cool. And I think that it was interesting talking with people in this last election that were going door to door for Kamala Harris. And they were saying, oh, there's no, the Trump people are not going door to door. They're not doing this. They're not. And they thought it was so good, but it's because they were doing so many things digitally and informing yep. people digitally and having those town halls like you want to do. Oh my God, we should do that. Dude, we have, yep. yes, please do that. Because I think that the more informed we are, the better we'll do. Pete Buttigieg said on a podcast that if you look at the issues, you look at where the Democrats are and you look at where the American public is, they're not far apart.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean the newly bearded.
I know. Yes. Yeah. He looks good. A little salt and pepper going on there. It looks nice.
He's in Michigan now. Yes. And, you know, he's got himself a beard.
That's right. Yes. And I like what he says. And we got about, you know, a minute left. But I like what he says about we can't be afraid to go into places that are uncomfortable and have these conversations. And I've said. Oh,
it's necessary for us to do so.
Yes.
It's necessary. Right. We have to. We'll see success if we're only talking to ourselves.
Right. 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 You can't expand that tent. You can't, you know, get that coalition to grow if all we're doing is sitting in an echo chamber. We got Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes here on the Rational Revolution. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what happens to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and some of your thoughts coming right up on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, listeners. I was talking off the air with Todd the God, our producer behind the glass. We were kind of making fun of some of the old-time radio people that just got like puke in their mouth. Good stuff. We don't do that here at the Rational Revolution, but what we do is we talk to cool people. And we've got Mandela Barnes here. Oh, my God. Again, thank you. Fun fact about Mandela here. We're both born in December of 1986, so we're pretty much related. I think that's how that works. That's about as good as, yeah, very close.
Astrologically.
That's right. Yeah. So I want to ask, we're looking to the future, looking at kind of what happens, you know, coming up. There's going to be a big change with Wisconsin Democratic politics. Ben Wickler stepped down. And that's going to suck. Hey, like that's what happens next.
I'll tell you, Ben has done wonders for the party. I think the most important thing Ben did was lay a foundation for the party.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there are, you know, some folks who are able to step in. You know, okay. I've worked with Pecky for a long time.
Who was that? He cut out.
His name is Joseph. Oh, shoot.
Oh, there you are. You're back. All right. What was the name of it?
Oh, I'm not sure what just happened. Man.
That's okay.
Joseph Becky. So,
oh, okay. Okay.
He's a comms guy.
All right.
Like him a lot. Known him for a while. You know, Devin Rimmer, who was ED for Ben for some time. He's running as well.
Okay.
It's going to be, and there are some other folks who are running too, if I'm not mistaken. Those are the two that I know, you know, that I know the best. So, look, it's going to be a make or break period for the party.
Yeah.
But also, I want people to realize too that, you know, this was something that we hadn't ever had before with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And so we were lucky in a sense, but it also should make us, you know, realize how much or how important it is to make sure that the not just the party is strong, but the party apparatus, the organizations that are doing the independent work, the organizers. And I do think that infrastructure is in place now. It is important to keep that infrastructure up. It's also important to continue to focus on that outside organizing as well.
Yeah. And I think, there's good people there that can step up and
do it. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've known Joseph Peggy for quite some time. He was helpful to me, you know, during my primary. He was a person, you know, who I do a lot of work with him. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. What's Ben going to do, do you think? Do you know?
I don't know. And I'm like, every day I stop myself from asking. Like, because I know how it feels. Like everybody
Well, I'm gonna ask you.
What's next for you? What are you doing next?
And right.
It's like, I know how stressful that question is.
Yeah.
And so like every day I have to look at my phone and not text him that.
I know. And I it's funny, I sent him like this long thank you. And it was heartfelt and he responded back. And then I thought I was texting my employee chat with my guys, and I was like, hey, is anyone moving that 17 edge? You know, and then Ben Wickler is like, what? And I'm like, oh my God. I was freaking texting him. And so I'm like, that's good. You know, thanks, man. You're great. Oh, no problem. Hey, what that edge? Oh my God. It's very embarrassing. Good, clean fun. So there's talk that Wisconsin can flip the assembly and Senate. Is that realistic?
It is realistic. I will say, you know, full transparency, I would say the Senate is more likely. But again, given how substantial that victory was this past spring, if it's an indicator of people's feelings and thoughts, not just about Donald Trump, but about Republicans who are governing the state right now, it could be a clean sweep, especially if they keep at it. In the direction that they're going with this level of uncertainty, with this level of chaos, with this, what feels like wholly intended disruptions of our democracy. There's no way that the people of the state of Wisconsin are going to accept things like this for so long. We've already demonstrated our opposition to the way Donald Trump is handling affairs in this state, the way Elon Musk is handling affairs in this country, Donald Trump in this country and Elon Musk in this country. And regardless, if he's out, the damage is still done. Mm-hmm. And this isn't damage that is one, easy to rectify, or two, easy to forget.
Right. And I'm going to talk to you about that in just a little bit, because you have unique experience working with that administration, or trying to, I guess, but there's another guy that I want to know, you know, what is he going to do? Your buddy, Governor Evers, what is he doing?
During the presidential race, like I saw the governor active in ways that I had never seen.
I know. Before. Yes.
He was on the bus tour traveling across the country to governor's like, man, this dude's got
he's motivated.
He's got, I don't know, he's like, he took a shot of something. Uh-huh. He's man, it was good to see. Really good to see. And also, I mean, as of late, He's been more active in calling out the Trump administration. He's been more active in, I think there's a lawsuit that's been filed. There's just a number of things. Like, he's been much more outspoken. Yeah. The budget that was introduced earlier this year does feel like a reelection budget. So I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a couple months. And that's on me. I do owe him a call. But another thing where if we're on the phone, I'm going to ask him.
Yeah, I know.
And so that is the reason why I haven't, we talk regularly. The reason I haven't called is because I am going to ask him, and I would rather not ask.
Right.
Because, you know, it's a decision he's got to make either way, but it does feel like he's got a little bit of pep in his step in some ways, you know, more than he had in 2018.
Well, yeah. And we're talking with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. I think also it is an exciting, idea that, hey, if he has one of the branches of government, holy crap, we might actually get some stuff done.
There is the prospect that, you know, if I'm him, I will run again.
Hell yeah.
Having spent 8 years with a legislature that was hell bent on, you know, seeing you fail.
They're kicking you in the teeth.
Versus, you know, the potential to have at least one branch of legislature, if not both.
Yeah.
No, that the prospect would be too appealing to just walk away.
Right. And I think he's very popular.
He remains popular.
Right. And I think that would be, yeah, you'd want to, it sucks because it's like, do you retire and kind of go off into your thing? And that's a tough decision. Yep. But I hope that he does stick around. We got just a little bit left. When we come back, I want to talk about, we kind of teased it a little bit, your experience. Where are we as a country? You were on CNN and you said some, you didn't mince words. And I want to revisit some of the things that you said, because that kicked ass and it was great. We got Mandela Barnes here on the Rational Revolution. We'll talk about that right when we come back. Welcome back. We got one more segment with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Dude, thank you. Seriously, like, thank you. I appreciate your time today a lot.
For sure, man. I'm glad we made this happen.
Yeah, me too. I want to ask this, and this might take a little bit of setting up, but I want to talk to you about your experience with the Trump administration. I want you to tell me if I'm off base here. Because when you were in office, you dealt with this. And you have a very, very unique perspective. Donald Trump, he thrives in an environment where, like, the consequences that result from his blatant lies are less than the potential reward that can come from whatever fight he's engaged in. He thinks that he can lie and gaslight his way out of everything. You know, like, oh, I won the election. Everybody knows it, right? He can say stuff like, you know, I'm 6'3 and 215 pounds because there's no consequence. But that all falls apart in the face of crisis. You know, in the case of an emergency where facts matter, he'll say, you know, it all falls apart. He'll say, we're in the midst of a golden age of the American economy, but we just had the worst April since the Great Depression. Or, like you saw, first freaking hand, when he downplayed the COVID pandemic, suggesting people ingest bleach and mocking people who are wearing masks in public, all while thousands of people are dying every single day from COVID. He couldn't lie his way out of that, and he was resoundingly rejected by the American people because of it. And the parallel to COVID, in my opinion, is this. Donald Trump came into office, love the guy or hate the guy, with a rip-roaring economy from Joe Biden. And he did. And Donald Trump has single-handedly tanked every single major market index in the entire world himself. He created this new financial and economic crisis, and he's not— he's trying to lie his way out of it, saying we're in some fantasy land golden age. You have the incredibly unique perspective of trying to deal with this delusion firsthand in the face of true crisis. How does this get better?
Yeah, let me say two quick things. One, you talk about the strength of the economy that was inherited by Joe Biden. And I'll say even in the Trump years, like it, we had the little dip during the pandemic, but it came back.
From Biden, yes, yes.
Through Biden, but like I'm not even going to dismiss, you know, Trump not taking the economy at that point. Like the economy was still strong under Donald Trump during his first term.
Yep.
We'll not discuss that. But he also inherited a strong economy from Barack Obama.
Yes, he did.
Who brought us from what the from what George Bush brought us, which was economic turmoil and disaster. And so with that being said, we experienced a health crisis under Donald Trump that was poorly managed, that was dismissed. And we are on the brink of an economic catastrophe if we don't get serious people in the way of, you know, in a way to stop Donald Trump. And when you look at the market performance based on his statements about tariffs, where he's waffling, going back and forth. You got Scott Bessent pushing back, Treasury Secretary pushing back. All these people who are pushing back, who are much more intelligent than him when it comes to financial matters. And, you know, I talked about the fact that we are trusting a failed businessman with the entire economy. And it's not just the American economy, it's the global economy that responds to the American economy. And this is a person who operates purely off of hunches and grievances. And if Donald Trump is allowed to continue to go in this direction that he's going, he is going to take us to depths that we could not, that we could have not imagined in 2008 when George W. Bush was president. And it's absolutely unfair to us because people still made out like bandits during the 2008 financial crisis.
Yep.
And people like Donald Trump still stand to benefit as a result of the economic pain that everyday working people are going to have to deal with. We still don't talk enough about the Trump coin, which was, which was, you know, essentially his opportunity to launder as much money as he wants. And if you destabilize the American dollar, that is what gives rise and power to the sort of to cryptocurrency, which Donald Trump is now actively participating in with an opportunity to gain untold financial sums as a result of.
Well, I want to talk.
How do we stop that?
Yeah, right. I want to talk about like where we are as a country right now. You had a video that blew up on CNN where you were talking about how the denial of due process is not a slippery slope. It's a cliff. Like, and then you're saying the directions that we're going to go. This is like multi-fronts here, from the due process front to the assault on media and the assault on truth to the economy, to healthcare. Like, my God.
Right. It doesn't stop there, right? It doesn't stop at this one person who was shipped off to a gulag. It doesn't stop.
Right.
And it doesn't stop with this, with the issue of immigration. If we are allowed to suspend the rules in one instance, what stops them from suspending the rules when it comes to anything else? You mentioned the attacks on media, the Associated Press having their White House press credentials revoked, right? That should have had a much bigger impact than it has. That opens the door for any sort of to feel the same sort of pain. And if it can happen, I've said it before, it can happen to one, it can happen to anybody. And I think that is what I want to make sure people do not lose sight of, right? When I say it's a cliff, once you are allowed to participate in these sort of acts that dehumanize people, that delegitimize the Constitution, and also destroy the credibility of laws that we have on the books, that makes life that much more difficult, that makes democracy that much less certain in America.
Well, and yeah, we're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We one of the things, too, that like, the loss of privacy. Women, there was RFK wanted the data for his like autism thing, and he wanted like women's data. He wanted their smartwatch info, all the way down to that. Like, what? And so we sound like crazy conspiracy people because this is nuts. Because it's coming from a bunch of people who are freaking nuts.
And a lot of it is just so hard to believe.
Yes.
A person who's not paying attention to this every day just wouldn't believe it. And again, it makes the people who are calling this stuff out look like the bizarre ones.
Right. And so, you know, how do we fight this? Like, I don't know. It's really, I want to like doom scroll you here, but like.
When I say the best way to fight it, it is informing people. It is educating people in spite of the reason I was a little bit late today. I was meeting with someone and we were talking about where a certain 501c3 organization should stand. And I'm speaking about one that's like not as widely known as some other ones. And there was a letter that went out, and the letter that went out was, you know, challenging attacks or potential acts on 501c3 organizations, on environmental organizations. And the question was, do we sign on to this or do we not? And I said, of course we sign on to this, because what good is it if we cower in fear? What good is it if we run and hide? What good is it if we are the only organization left standing after some sort of purge? What work will there be for us to do? And if we are the only ones left, then obviously there's no way for us to hide. We will be the only ones there. And who's going to stand up for us when it's our turn?
Yeah.
To face the music.
Right. My cousin works for the school district down in Texas. And we were talking the other day about how ridiculous it is about Greg Abbott's attacks on DEI coming from a dude in a wheelchair. Right. You know, you talk about moron, but all of these different assaults, what's the goal with everything? What are they trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear. Like the Trump's dictator on day one statements, like those were not to be taken lightly. These are folks who have seen, you know, what democracy truly means for them to be in power. And democracy is seen as an impediment to people like Donald Trump. Democracy is seen as an impediment to people who want to end abortion access. Mm. Democracy is an impediment for people who are just trying to achieve some level of equality, God forbid equity, in this country. Democracy is seen as a resource for folks in that position. And that challenges the power structure, you know, as it currently stands. And one thing about power is people don't like to lose it. Mm. One thing I wish Democrats did better was use power when we have it.
Mm. Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I've heard that before, you know, and it's so easy for Republicans to be a bully, and then Democrats have to be the ones that are the adults in the room. It's like, well, okay, well, we shouldn't do this. But what do you think is the most dangerous cliff that we're facing right now?
The most dangerous cliff is again the suspending of norms. You know. If you give a mouse a cookie, right, that is what's happening right now. We are allowing the Trump administration to do little by little, you know, whether it's Republicans in Congress who are not standing up, or whether, you know, it's Democrats who are still trying to figure out how to work with this administration. Like, I get the desire to want to get something done. We're not in normal times right now. We're not in normal circumstances. And the more people, you know, give space to say, well, we work with Democrats to make this happen, the less urgent this dilemma we're in is, because it becomes bipartisan. It becomes something that just happens as a function of government. So if, you know, Democrats are willing to go along with, you know, some of the madness or even try to make sense of it, it makes it seem as if it's not that bad. And we are approaching a moment where everybody who supports a stable functioning country in the form of democracy needs to stand up, make their voice heard, and use the power of the word no.
When you were in office, and I mean, you were facing a once in a generation pandemic, what was it like trying to work with the administration to like have people not die?
Well, it was tough because, you know, as we did everything we could to keep people safe, what we received was, you know, pushback, not necessarily the resources that we needed as a state, you know, in as urgently as possible, right? Like there could have been a much more seamless pause on daily life, right? Like where it wouldn't have hit people as hard if only the federal government had taken it seriously. If the federal government had done what they were supposed to do, see the science, see the trends, and respond accordingly, the impact, one, in terms of mortality, wouldn't have been at the level that it was, but also the social and the economic impacts would not have been the same because we could have created a sort of buffer. And, you know, also, if you have a president who's saying, you know, inject, if you're having a president that suggests ivermectin, you know, we would be in a much better place. And the thing that always baffles me about that is like, you know, ivermectin, that's still it's still a medication, right? Yeah. Like, never mind the fact that it's a horse dewormer. it's still a form of medication. So it's like, you just don't trust the science of the libs.
Right.
You trust what some person suggested you should do because it feels less like a conspiracy theory for whatever reason. And that's one thing that I've always struggled with, but we didn't have a president who said, hey, this is the situation.
Right.
This is how we will respond to it as a country. This is how we'll save lives. This is how we'll protect the economy.
Right. I got one more question. Are you going to run for something? I got to ask you, you know, we talked about that with,
yeah. It's all good. This is not a political answer, but it's not a no.
Okay.
Truly, just at this moment, I can't say a yes or no. Right. Like if the right opportunity presents itself, that's still my line. Like I'm not going to run for something for the sake of running for it. And I'm not going to run for something if the timing isn't right.
Right.
Stars do align.
Yeah. Well, I'm on Team Barnes whenever you got it. So I thank you. Dude, thank you so, so, so much. I appreciate you, Mandela. Mandela Barnes on the Rational Revolution. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. It's just me now. You know, you got the Rational Revolution. How about that? Mandela Barnes. It's really good to hear from him, and he's doing some incredible things with touched on with Power to the Polls and that work there. And I think we've talked about it. I've talked about it that, you know, the way to win, the way we can combat whatever happens is with information, and it's information, and it's also courage to not just pass off that conversation where they. You guys, you'd hear it. Well, aren't we glad that we don't have Kamala in there? Well, instead of saying, well, let's talk about that. You know, I think that is a way that we start healing because people that have some of those opinions need to be pushed out of their comfort zone. Growth begins at the end of your comfort zone. We have to be uncomfortable or get comfortable in the uncomfort of having those discussions. And I think when people who have the opinions that it's okay to hurt people will get those opinions challenged time after time after time, maybe they might think differently too. Wouldn't that be awesome? But my thanks to Mandela Barnes for his time today. He is freaking brilliant. And boy, he would have been a wonderful senator. And I hope his time in politics is not over. Because his voice is one that is very needed. And speaking of a voice that's very needed, I want to talk about the voice that fell silent this week. I want to talk about Pope Francis. That loss is a big one. Yeah, I touched on it last week where I talked about how, I'm not part of the Catholic faith any longer. And, but I do admire the people who can have that faith or any faith, and I asked the question, what is faith? And I do want to revisit that a little bit when I said that what an act of faith it is to set your head down on your pillow at night, fall asleep, and have the faith that you are going to wake up the next day. That's why I personally, every night before I go to bed, I want my children and my wife to know, as the last thing I say to them, I want them to know how much I love them. And that's a big deal. But for the people that are members of a faith community, regardless of what faith that is, I think they can feel the loss of Pope Francis. And I know that there are some detractors out there, and I've seen detractors that would say, "Oh well, Francis, he didn't go far enough. He didn't go far enough to advance the causes that he talked about." And I want to push back on that a little bit, because people would say that about me when I was a member of the Republican Party and I was trying to advance us in a direction that was open and that was welcoming. So I was the only official that supported marriage equality in the state of Wisconsin during that debate. I suppose that's about as far as you can go, but when it came to issues about being pro-life and not pro-life and pro-life of women and giving them the ability to make decisions for themselves, I was pro-choice, but admittedly, I was not as loud as I could be, because I knew that I couldn't be very loud, but I knew that what I could do, I would do. And so you look at Pope Francis, who really shattered a lot of norms from where he decided to live, to who he spoke with, to who he appointed. He had women in leadership. He blessed gay marriages. He comforted children. That very famous video of the kid whose dad was an agnostic, and he asked if he was in heaven, and Pope Francis said, "God has a heart of a father," and comforted that child. Man, what a thing. And he said that the Catholic faith was not the only path to eternal life. I mean, incredible. Big, big things. And I don't always want to be doom and gloom on the show, but I am ever an optimist. I am. I don't think in my professional life, I'm a business owner, and I don't think you are a business owner if you think everything's bad. Life is good. But I think that this is such a loss, not just to the Catholic faith, but to the whole world. Because what we saw in Pope Francis, what we had in Pope Francis, was such brilliant and beautiful signs about just how good life can be if we just love one another. And we need to be reminded of how good life is in a time when it's so easy to forget that. Pope Francis, his impact, his legacy, what he did goes so far beyond the walls of Vatican City. It reaches people across faiths, across genders, across sexual orientation. It reaches people because what we saw was a man who was willing to say, "I'm not perfect, and I love everyone." And for a church that can be really pompous about, "Oh, you don't get to go to heaven. You don't get to go to heaven," like the Oprah Winfrey show, right? What he said was, who am I to judge? And he lived his life more like Christ than anyone I saw in leadership in the Catholic Church. You know, fun fact, Jesus didn't say anything about gay people in the Bible. Not one. He never said anything about it. And I believe that Pope Francis would have no problem, would have had no problem doing a marriage ceremony for two men or two women, because he knew that the love they had for each other mirrored the love that a man would have for a woman, which mirrored the love that God has for us, right? It's love. I will miss his leadership and his kindness and his example of how to live a life of humility and kindness and generosity to people who you never met. What an amazing, amazing legacy that he left us here on earth. That's all I've got for you. I appreciate you very much. This is Mark Becker saying thanks to the Civic Media Radio Network, and thanks for listening to The Rational Revolution. We'll see you next week. For me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.